You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
A bit like dogs, actually. They're the same, aren't they? Yeah. I always think children are a bit like that, particularly boys. You know, I always think when people say, how do you deal with four boys? I'm like, well, you just feed them well, you run them twice a day like a puppy, and so you exercise them, and then you give them good food and plenty of sleep.
It's making me feel very intelligent.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Now, Alison and I were chatting just before we started recording because we had this guest on 18 months ago. And it's made us realise how much changes in 18 months.
Yeah. I was just thinking about this, how my twins were about to start school. And I was, you know, they're six now and they're in year one. And it really made me realise how much easier life feels now compared to 18 months ago. And so I guess I just feel like it's important to acknowledge that. And if anyone's listening who has currently got young preschool kids and they're at the cool face and they're just feeling like this is hard, I'm here to tell you from this side of the podcast to the other, it gets easier.
Well, let's find out if the last 18 months has got easier for our guest. Give us her showbiz intro, Alison.
Here's her showbiz intro. Yes, we've got a returning guest this week, and she's brought someone with her this time because we're joined by television presenter Sarah Beeny and her 19-year-old son, Charlie. Now, Sarah's brilliant new podcast, Seriously, sees her jump feet first into some tricky and sometimes awkward conversations with her sons. Topics that they cover include things like sexting, gender, and the menopause. Sarah and Charlie, welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, hello, lovely to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So let's start by talking about the podcast. Tell us what inspired you. Were you just having a chat around the dinner table and thought, this is gold, we should record this? Or did you create a podcast to give you a reason to discuss tricky topics that you felt we weren't talking about?
It definitely wasn't my idea to talk about the menopause, I'll be honest. But when the idea was kind of created, I was definitely excited about it. I thought it sounded really fun.
I mean, it probably does a little bit of both of those things, actually. I mean, it was things that we talked about anyway, and there were moments where I thought, God, this... You know, and sometimes we'd have conversations and then I'd mention it to other friends and they'd go, God, I haven't talked about that. And I think, oh, God, maybe we should all talk more. And but then also, to be honest, recording the podcast is really enjoyable because you get them, like, kind of, you get to sit down and actually really have a conversation and like, really dig deeper into...
It's a fairly extreme length to have gone to just to get your kids in the same room as you and have a chat, you know.
To do it where you can, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, I suppose we'd... It's a much more kind of sort of considered way of talking, whereas normally it would be snippet bits of conversation here and there. But yeah, I mean, I do think that we don't all talk as much as we should. And one of the things I am aware of the fact that with the kids, because Charlie is one of four, he's got three brothers, so there's four of them. When you do talk about something, it's always better after you've talked about it. You kind of go, oh, that's such a relief we've talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, especially when there's just something that everyone knows, it's like an elephant in the room and no one wants to talk about it, and then you suddenly do it. There's things that we've spoken about on the podcast that we've never spoken about in real life, just because
we didn't get around to it, or possibly they didn't want to bring it up and I've brought it up, and then I learn. And that's the thing that I think is really important and exciting for me, is that we all think there's this generation gap, and that's, I hear it a lot, that where people go, oh, we think this, and then we have an opinion as I say we, people of my age have an opinion as to how younger people might think or what they think, but we have it from our point of view. And then when you see it from their point of view, and if everybody took other people's points of view on board, sometimes you go, oh, I'm actually... oh yeah, that isn't right actually. So it's learning from them, and then you learn to go, oh, actually, I think I'm stuck in my ways, and actually I hadn't thought about it like that. And that's actually a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Now, Charlie, you said that you were excited to do the podcast, but was there any arm twisting involved? I mean, is it not a bit uncool to do a podcast with your mum?
Well, I mean, I didn't find it too uncool. I thought it was all right. It's going to be as uncool as I make it if I say uncool things, isn't it?
I'm looking at it. I like that.
But no, there wasn't really. I actually was on board from the start. I thought it would be pretty funny. We've always had a difficult dynamic as well with because we're in a band and we've been trying to juggle the kind of Sarah Beeny's New Life in the Country, the TV show, and the fact that we're also trying to be in a band, and the two images don't really add up. And I feel like this was a good opportunity to kind of just explain it all, kind of get the personalities actually out there.
It is nice actually that in a way, because on a podcast, that's the thing I love about podcasts is because it's not really edited. I mean, you might, if you kind of, I don't know, you drop your computer, you might edit that bit out, but it's not really edited. And so it's a longer form of a conversation, whereas in a TV show, you've got to cut it to get to the point and cut the lines. And so, yeah, I sort of think it enables you to cover subjects more honestly and more in a more rounded way. It probably helps because the band that they've got is with their dad, my husband, as well. So there's a lot of intergenerational stuff going on because he's basically my husband and their dad is, well, he's basically a rock star with them, and so you know,
that's very kind, but I'm not sure we
maybe rock
that far
not
yet.
Star a rock yes. people.
One day.
So do your two younger boys appear on the podcast as well, or is it just Billy and Charlie?
At the moment it's Billy and Charlie because they're at school, and so it's easier to have Billy and Charlie write music and record music and everything with Graham Moore, and the other two come in when they can and then play obviously and write stuff, but it's, you know, time
juggling being at school is just it's almost impossible to do it, and then adding the podcast on top of what we're already trying to do with the band, it makes it almost impossible. Yeah. So that's why it's us, plus I think those two wouldn't be as funny as us.
That's probably true.
No actually. Sibling rivalry then.
Yeah,
I'm joking.
I think
sure
they probably will do an appearance. My Graham was in the last couple, and actually it was really fun with him. So they do want to do it, and they will, but half time's taken up because they've got a very big gig on, and you know, there's a lot of other things. You know, the diary juggle is the diary juggle.
Well, there aren't many school kids who are also trying to be in gigs and be in a band. So, as you said, that's a big enough juggle without hurling a podcast at them as well.
Yes. Yeah, that is the truth. So we tend to record it.
And also, I feel like if you were at school, talking about some of the things that we talk and then going into school and having your friends go, that was nice that you were talking about that. I feel like it would be harder to deal with.
Yeah.
I can see that. Now, Charlie, growing up, have you always been the kind of family that talk about everything and anything around the dinner table? Has it been the kind of like an oversharing situation growing up, or has it been all right?
Yeah, it's been an oversharing situation. but I don't think that's a bad thing. We've just learned to be oversharing as well, not just let other people be oversharing with us. I think it's the right way to be oversharing, to be honest.
You can close the conversation down always, can't you? But sometimes,
or you can just leave if it's getting too much. But
yeah, maybe. There has been a lot of openness, maybe too much openness. But you know, it's really interesting that I found when they were really little is, you know, when a conversation opened up and you were kind of like, oh, should we go here? My brother once said to me when they were really small, he said when the, because he's got slightly older kids, and he said if they ask you a question, don't skirt around it. And I hear about people who, you know, their parents ask, you know, their children ask them a question and they make up some amazing not truth. And he just went, no, just go in and tell the truth, just factually. Don't go around it. You know, so if they ask a very personal question, then just say it. Just say the fact. And normally, I did find when they were little, you know, I remember when I brought Laurie back from hospital, which is like my youngest. So they were only wee. They were like 2, 4, and 5, I think, or something like that. And they said, oh, how did the baby get in your tummy? And I thought,
here we go.
So, yeah, so that was... But you just go for it. You just say it. And then they, as soon as you say it, they just went...
It's all right. I've got a friend who says, just go ultra biological in that situation. Yes. Just go with the biology, go with the science, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, no feeling.
One of my old editors got herself into such a pickle with this because when her kid asked that question, she said, Mummy and Daddy have a special cuddle. And that then the baby's put in. And then the kid in supermarket of choice, don't know which one. Basically, they were in the queue and there was a couple in front of them hugging. And she was like, Mummy, is that one of those special cuddles that makes babies? To the It's like, yeah, just tell them the truth.
Yeah, just tell them
the truth. Skirt safer.
Yeah.
So you kind of went for the no topic is off limits theory.
Yeah. Always, actually. And I guess there's a sort of biology thing, which is actually easier to do. But sometimes it's the how you feel that you need to share. And I guess...
I think as a kid, though, anything's only weird if your parents have implied that it's an uncomfortable topic. Then it's an uncomfortable topic. If a parent goes, no, then just talks about it naturally, then the kid will go, oh, yeah, that's completely normal and...
Yeah, because I think children, they kind of relate to how you feel more than what you say. You know, you often hear people say this, and I think this is really true, is that children don't listen to when you say to them, don't do that. They copy how you behave. So if you're very rude to everyone, but you say you must be polite, they're just going to be really rude to everyone because they see you doing that rather than what they hear and what they witness.
I once saw a video of someone speaking to their baby, and their baby was all right, and they went, oh, you're such a horrible, horrible, disgusting little baby. Oh. And the baby was kind of loving it, and then they went, you're so nice, you're such a nice baby, and they obviously hated it. So I think that pretty much sums it up there.
Yeah, that proves it.
Yeah, a bit like dogs, actually. They're the same, aren't they? I always think children are a bit like, particularly boys, you know, they're a bit like dogs. You have to, I always think when people say, how do you deal with four boys? I'm like, well, you just feed them well, you run them, and you...
Twice a day, take them out twice a day,
twice a day, like a puppy. And so you exercise them, and then you give them good food and plenty of sleep.
It's making me feel very intelligent.
He's a bit outnumbered, bless him.
Now, being the mum of four boys, has it been important to you to raise them as feminists, or is that something that you haven't felt the need to introduce into their lives?
I again, in a way, I think you just are the way you are. Someone once said to me after the absolutely appalling, terrible situation with that poor, poor girl, Sarah Everard. And I had a journalist who said, how are you going to not bring your boys up to be rapists? And I was like, what? Like, that's just such a weird thing to ask. I mean, just by making them into normal people that don't, you know, that's a bizarre situation. And they said at the time they'd been at school, and there was people at school who were saying, oh, you have to be really careful because every boy's a rapist. And they were like, Mum, what is this? And I was like, well, that was a bad time for boys.
That was a bad time.
I mean, I do think they are quite feminist, though, if I'm honest.
Definitely.
But not because I've said you must be a feminist. And I don't use the word feminist very often. I use the word equal a lot because I think I'm an equalist rather than a feminist. I believe everybody should have equal... They are equally... They're not the same, but they should be equal. So I guess I don't think... I've never liked girls clubs, but I don't really like boys clubs. You know, I don't think either. Just have people clubs, you know, people who like art. Don't have a girls art club, because then you can't say, well, you're not allowed a boys art club, but we can have a girls art club. I'm like, why can't you just have an art club, and then people who like art can all come.
I always think this is weird about, you know, like the Scouting Association, now like Scouts and Beavers, girls and boys can join, which is great. But then you've got like brownies and guides, and only girls get to go to those clubs. And it's like, this feels really outdated. Can we not just have all of the kids going to a club?
I sort of agree with you. And I actually think this is probably going to get me cancelled, actually.
Don't say it then. That's easy. Just
I'm going to say it anyway.
No, you can say it on the podcast, because then if it's really bad, we can cut it out.
Well, then, because it's on our podcast, not yours, is what you're saying.
We'll cut it out if it's really bad, Sarah.
Go on, say it, and we'll
I think not using the word actress, I know we now have to say actor, but I sort of think, I don't know why girls have to pretend to be boys to be equal. I'm not sure why actors didn't have to be actresses if we're going to equal it out. I don't. Why do we cancel out the girl version of it? And they
maybe we
to...
need a new name that is like a neutral.
Yeah,
well, I think having girls as actors and having boys as other way around made it, having boys as actors and girls as actresses. Would you prefer to be a god or a goddess? Like, I don't think it's ever been a problem.
No, that's
my opinion. But then I don't mind being
a goddess. To be fair.
No, me neither. Seeing as we've got you talking about tricky topics, Sarah, you recently caused a right stir talking about Andrew Tate on Breakfast Telly. So was that taken out of context?
Completely taken out of context. Actually, do you know, it's something I said it's one of the things I really believe, and that is that we've kind of got to this difficult situation where we are young people, as a massive generalisation, but the girls are drifting a bit left and boys are drifting a bit right. And that is not a good situation anyway. And I also think there's a very toxic right, but there's also a toxic left. And the people in the middle are too frightened to have a conversation because they don't want to be seen as being toxic in any way. So they're like, well, I just won't say anything. So that conversation came up because I think that there's a bit of a cancellation of positive male role models. And if you don't allow positive male role models, you end up with toxic male role models, because if you're a young teenage boy, not sort of Charlie's age because he's old enough to know better, but if you're like 12 or 13 and you don't talk to your parents and you don't have conversations with people, who are your role models? And if you don't have any good role models, the danger is that people who are talking, like Andrew Tate, they kind of go to them. And the really dangerous thing I think about Andrew Tate is the fact that some of what he says is quite sensible, like go to the gym, get fit. But then with this kind of covering of some things that are quite, you know, you could go, yeah, that seems fair. Then in there, he curveballs in some properly appalling thoughts, which are absolutely toxic.
But just segued in.
And they're just thrown in. So if he only said the toxic things, everyone would just cancel him anyway, because he's obviously ridiculous and absolutely absurd. But he sort of dresses it up and surrounds it with some things that they don't sound that weird, but then he's like chucks in this terrible, terrible language, which makes young people who aren't able to pick through what's normal and not normal and what's okay and not okay. And I think there's a danger that young boys might think, oh, that's okay then, I agree with that. Well, it's not okay, and they shouldn't be in any way, you know, you can't say they're not exposed to these things, because they will, but they should be in a position where they've got a role model where they can go, obviously that's completely ridiculous, obviously you're an idiot. Exactly. And that was my point, but I did get a little bit, got taken out of context, and they cut to the end credits before I got my big point in. So,
Okay. Charlie, what's your take on it all? How have you managed to navigate all of that through your teens?
Well, I think my parents are pretty positive role models, so, and that's always been helpful. And then I think I've got quite a good support network of people that mean that I've never had to turn to someone like Andrew Tate. But that's not to say that I haven't probably gone through my teens and had some pretty terrible views whilst I was trying to work out who I am and what I am. But I feel like that's part of growing up, and all you can do is really try and get to who you are and be the right person really quickly.
Yeah, and if you can talk about those things, I suppose that's what I feel. If you can come home and say how you feel about something. So I, back on the subject, I said to the boys, I was being really rude about him, saying how awful and dreadful and toxic he was. And they said, have you ever watched any of his videos? And I went, no, I've just heard he's toxic. And they showed me one. And I was like, oh, well, that one seems okay. And then they showed me the others, and I went, that's why I hate him. But, yeah. But you know, they, and then I, that's when I reached this conclusion, because I only thought he only said the toxic things, because I never actually
looked. It was the thing about him talking about how he was pro-choice, and he made some pretty good points about it, and then the next, and then you swipe one down, and he was talking about, I can't remember what it was, something about just
women
very
being
sexist.
Owned or something.
Yeah.
Like something really horrendous.
How can you get from one to the other? How does that even work? But he does.
But like you said, Sarah, that is actually the man's strength. That's what he gets. He reels you in with something that's, oh, okay, maybe he's not quite as big a dick as I thought he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, boom, when you're in, he throws something completely toxic at you.
And for people our age, that's okay, because we can see that and go, yeah, you were just using that to reel us in. And once you've got your thoughts together, or you've got people to talk to, so by 19, Charlie's kind of like, oh, you know, that makes sense. But what if you're little and you don't haven't had anyone talk about the right to have a, you know, to pro-life or not pro-life. If no one's ever said that to you, if your parents have never had a discussion with you about it, where do you know what to know?
Yeah. Now, Charlie, you've already mentioned that you've got a really good support network and that your parents have brought you up really well. What do you think has been the biggest challenge for you, though, in the last sort of 10 years or so growing up? We so often talk to parents about the challenges that they face. But as a child, growing up into an adult, what have been the challenges that you've faced?
The challenges that I've faced? I know you hate bringing it up because you're well over it now and you're kind of out the other side. But I felt like you having cancer was a difficult time for all of us. I think social media, especially when we were in lockdown, there's a whole generation of people that for 6 months all they did was watch TV and play games, and I feel like that was pretty difficult, especially when we got out the other side and I was trying to communicate with people and be like,
have a real conversation.
So I would say that's two things that were pretty hard to
manage. I mean, social media is a difficult one because we all know it's so bad for your mental health. That's little advantages.
Well,
it's nice.
I don't think social media is bad for your mental health.
It's
I think
overuse.
Overuse of social media is bad for your mental health.
Yeah, and it's your reliance on it. And I think that that is a danger because, you know, I was really lucky because I'm old enough to remember before the internet. And, you know, when I was a teenager, there were no cameras around, so there's no
Thank
evidence.
Thank the Lord for that. There are some things I'm really glad there's not photos of.
That's a problem as well.
Yeah.
Every terrible thing that you've done is now recorded.
On someone's phone somewhere.
What? Yeah. 40 years ago, if you did something, you're probably going to, I mean, you might get a bit of bad rep, but that's not, it's not going to be come up when you're in 20 years' time, is it?
Yeah, when you embarrass yourself when you were younger, when I was younger, then, you know, that was just that.
Yeah. You woke up the next morning and thought, oh God, who saw? And then you figured out who saw and you said, that was all right, only 5 people saw that, and that was that. No one else saw.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Charlie, if you could, this is the bit where you get to make your mum cry or shout at you, depending on what you fancy saying. So if you could thank her for one aspect of her parenting, what would you thank her for? And if you could ever so tactfully tell her something you wish she'd done a bit differently, what would it be?
Okay. well, I guess I'd like to thank you for being so open and talking to us honestly and not kind of leaving me out of the loop with anything, because I feel like I've benefited from that. And something that I would change God, I've been put on the spot here. Something you would change. I would change.
What you always say that you wish I'd be more consistent.
Yeah, I do always say that you wish you'd been more consistent.
In what way?
Well, she used to threaten, like, the most ridiculous punishments. like, if we were going somewhere for like a week, say we were leaving home, going on holiday or something, she would threaten to not take us on holiday. So just one time.
That's just standard parenting.
When's that ever going to happen? When are you going to leave one child behind and then just go on holiday?
I've been tempted. Yeah, I have to say.
Yeah, but
if you'd gone for something a bit more realistic.
Yeah, I do remember pulling over once. We were driving down the motorway and I was like, I'm going to pull over and leave you on the side of the M3. Yeah. And they all just went, no, you're not. And I went, I will. And then you realise how ridiculous this is, because obviously you're not going to leave them the M3.
But then again, we also threatened to leave home and go and live somewhere else. And then that was never going to happen anyway, was it?
Individually or as a group, did you all say at the same time, like, that's it, we're off?
There were some individuals, there were some group efforts as well. It was... Yeah.
It was always the packing. They'd pack and it would be sort of like 6 pairs of pants, an apple and you know, I don't know, some Weetabix. And they'd be off and I'd be like... Okay, and then when it was one of them who packed and went, and they'd go down, we had this long drive in London, to get to our house, you had to go down this little path, and so you just ignore them while they packed and off they went, and then just as they kind of went around the corner of the garden, I'd be like, if it was one of them, I'd say to one of their brothers, can you go and lean over the fence and just check where they're going? Just don't tell anyone. Don't let them see you. Just check that they don't get further than the end of the road. And they'll always go halfway and then hide behind a tree. And as long as they don't get to the road, come and tell me if they get to the road. And so, you kind of have to call their bluff and see who. Mm. It is an endless bluff. I remember running away as a child and hiding. And
yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm not going to go anywhere. I was just going to get somebody.
Yeah, so probably empty threats is something that if they had been more... proper threats and they had actually been seen.
You actually wanted to be dropped off on the side of the M3. So Sarah, that's what you should have done.
No, probably not. But something that I had known so that next time I wasn't as much of an idiot the next time.
I do know parents who faked the, if you don't hurry up and get your stuff together, I'm leaving without you. I know a couple of people who have got in the car
driven off.
Round the corner and sat outside the house for a minute and then gone back in.
They come back, aren't they? That's the thing.
But the thing is, if they go round and then come back and then you go to the place, it's like, well, what have I lost here? A few extra minutes of chilling.
And a mild case of panic when they disappear.
Years ago, I thought what you should do is you should plan an amazing trip somewhere. Right, you know, to the swimming pool or something like that and go, right, we're all going to the swimming pool when you know they're not going to cooperate and get in the car on time. And then you say, well, that's too late, we're not going. But you weren't going to go anyway, so then you haven't lost out either. So
yeah.
On an amazing holiday, you should say, right, we're all going on this incredible holiday and we're going to go kayaking and have a brilliant time. And then you say, but if you behave, we won't go. But you don't have anything planned because someone's going to do something wrong, aren't they? And you go, well, that's a shame. We're now not going kayaking anymore.
That's a pretty good...
pretty good. Yeah. I'm taking notes here. I'm going to try this with my kids. Yeah.
I should have done that. I should have invented amazing things that we cancelled.
Yeah.
Well, there's still time for us to do this, Alison.
I know. This is it. I'm going to do it. Sarah, it's clear that your boys have learned a lot from you listening to Charlie talk. But what's the one thing that you've learned from Charlie?
Oh, God, so many things. So many things.
Well, thanks.
That's well, no, I
yeah. Go on, then. You seem like you can't think of any.
I've learned a lot about, some preconceived ideas that I had. He told me about, it's on the podcast, we talked about OnlyFans, and I had before just thought, ridiculous. I mean, absolutely horrendous that people are doing this. And then he talked about it and I was like, actually, and I really changed my mind. I thought, actually, you know, that's...
It's better than a lot of things.
Yeah, I think you're being paid for what you want to do. So I've changed my mind on that. So I guess he's taught me to see things from a younger point of view. And a lot of the really difficult, complicated things that are happening now that weren't around when I was young I find the grammar of being, what's it called when you're not a man or a woman? You're a
they, them.
So we talk about that. I find the grammar incredibly complicated because I'm like, are there two people there or one person there? And he just thinks I'm just being ridiculous. He's like, oh, for goodness sake, it's so simple. So I've learned that. I'm like, you're right.
It is pretty simple, though. Like, it's not like you have to be really intellectual to do it. But then you...
But
okay,
then
fine,
I don't
yeah.
want to upset people, so I'm kind of like,
I don't,
people say,
I don't
oh,
think you can ever upset anyone if your sentiment is right. I just think that if you get...
Well, that's interesting, because generationally, I agree with your mum there. I'm always really worried about upsetting people by getting it wrong. So it's comforting to know that you're saying, as long as you've got the right aim with what you're trying
intentions,
to say,
yeah,
then intentions are good, then you're okay.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Okay. You've got the right intentions.
See, I learned something now as well.
And they're very cool about... they're very cool about all those kind of issues about... You know, being gender fluid and being sexually fluid, and I'm kind of like, God, it's so liberating. I'm kind of like, yeah, I suppose, you know, because I guess
it's just
when
like, how does it affect you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So why would you even care if it doesn't affect you in any way whatsoever?
Yeah.
You've got these people that are spending hours and hours commenting on videos. This is so wrong. This is so like, if you find it so wrong, just don't spend the time. And just ignore it. It doesn't, and live your own life. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's so great that you cover so many of these topics on your podcast. You know, things that I reckon most parents and kids never talk about, really. What's been the most, like, the cringiest thing that you've covered so far?
Oh.
Has there been anything that's just made your toes curl?
And it might be different for each of you.
You probably have to watch the podcast. I don't want to repeat it, to be honest.
To be honest, there's some stuff that, yeah. That I'm not even going to risk saying now because I, yeah.
Can you give us a rough area of what the topic was?
I think kind of, we have talked about porn, haven't we?
Porn
was a pretty difficult subject to cover. Maybe that's a problem that it's so difficult to cover. But
there's a little bit on admitting that. But talking about first relationships.
Yeah, and
opening
just hearing
up
about mum's first relationships and kind of
and their relationships.
And then, yeah, and then
I'm loving how totally flummoxed you both are by this. You're both like, you've got all tits and you're cringing.
But on the pod, when we're recording the podcast, you kind of, these subjects come up and then someone starts talking and I'm like, Should we cut? And then we kind of go. And then,
oh yeah, the sex thing as well. Yeah. That was pretty bad. You seemed horrified by that.
The whole
sex thing before you even go on a date thing.
Yeah.
It's like,
you two comparing your idea of dating was really eye-opening. What, Sarah, you thought of dating versus the boys, that was particularly eye-opening.
Yeah, mine's more kind of sepia, you know, film from the 1950s.
I think there's some things that are different.
So, you know, it's good though, because I suppose you only see life through your own spectacles, don't you, and your own experience. So you have your experience of life and that's how you see everything, and when you can add in somebody else's experience of how they see it, sometimes that makes you realize that
I think we're talking too much as if we're wise people and we're actually not very wise.
Yeah, let's not.
I feel like I've said some things today where I've been like, I'm clutching at straws here trying to be wise.
We're not very wise. Let's just not do that anymore.
No, I thought it was clever what you were saying, but I thought it was clever and I'm not very wise, so I don't know whether wise people would think it's clever.
Are there many wise people? Do you have a lot of people who are very wise watching this?
I mean, the Net Mums audience, they're a pretty wise bunch, but also
they're savvy. Yeah.
They're just regular mums.
They're going to have to listen to a 19-year-old try and be clever. I'm apologising. I've already done it. Really sorry.
They should, because you just.
But
like...
some of it is insightful. Some of the stuff you say, especially on the podcast, is insightful.
Yeah, I mean, we also talk about things that we don't talk about just because they're kind of tricky, like, you know, death and dementia. We did an episode on which That's something we don't all talk about, and that, you know, everybody is affected by dementia. Everyone's got either a grandparent or a parent or you know, some relative or a friend's grandparent or a friend's parent. Everybody is in some ways affected by it, and that's, you know, it's not a subject that anyone talks about. I don't know anybody who hasn't got somebody they know or someone they're related to or somebody they know who's related to. You know, we're all touched by it, aren't we? And so we talk about that.
Yeah, there's definitely insightful moments. I mean, there's one episode where I think it's Billy is talking about lying. He says something really good. He says something about it depends on why you're lying, whether it's to protect somebody or, I guess, cover something up. And it's like, I don't know, do you ever have moments where you're listening to them talk, Sarah, and you're thinking, oh, you're actually a really good human. Like, I've created some nice, clever humans here.
You can't say that. You can't say, oh, my kids are amazing. You can't say that.
No, I don't.
Of course you can.
It's really rubbish, don't worry. No, really, honestly, I do quite a lot, but not just on the podcast. It's the best thing about...
There's a lot of moments where we're pretty stupid.
No.
And I mean, it's definitely over 50% pretty stupid. We managed to put on our best brains for the podcast, I think.
I think that they are pretty stupid at times. But I do think they also, I do have... times in real life as well as on the podcast where I kind of think, they're really nice. You know, I know I'm biased. Everyone thinks their kids are nice, but, you know, they're kind of kind and wise and they work hard. And what else can you want, really? Kind?
We've just established that I'm not very wise, but...
You've established. Yes, we don't agree.
Fair enough. I'll take it. I'll definitely take it.
So how much of what you've said has ended up on the cutting room floor, as it were? Is there some bits where you've thought, nah, this has got to go?
No, not much, actually. It's recorded almost as it is, and so very little is on the... There's bits where I thought they should go on the cutting room floor, and then Jonathan, who's our lovely producer, has gone, okay, like... And then he argues it round, and he's like, I think it's really good. And then
we end up releasing things to the public that we would never have ever said.
No, he's just really persuasive. That's the trouble. Jonathan is really awful, and he's like, slightly difficult bits, he'll send a little cut, and he'll go, is this okay? And I'll go, ooh. And then I play it to all the boys and Graham, and I'm like, is this okay?
Maybe once or twice we've gone... Oh, that's a lot, isn't it? And I'm not even sure it would be entertaining for people to listen to. I think they would be wincing as much as we were.
Yeah, not educational, not entertaining, just really pointless.
Just really
unnecessary.
But you've had like a really, really amazing response to the podcast, haven't you? I mean, you know, looking on like Instagram posts and, you know, comments, reviews, people are like, oh, this is amazing, like listening to these conversations between, you know, parents and their kids.
Yeah, it's been an amazing response, actually. Much better than I imagined. I mean, I thought some people would I hoped some people would like it, but it's been an amazing response. And I think the biggest thing that I've had a lot of people contact me saying that they've listened to it, like on, you know, in the car or something, or I don't know, in the kitchen with their other people in their family, or other people in their household, and then they've ended up spending the next 2 hours talking about that. And whether they agree with us or don't agree with us, it's opened the conversation. So they'll go afterwards, they'll say, I don't agree with that, or I do. And then all of a sudden they're having the conversation. So the podcast, by dint of just existing, has meant that they've ended up talking. And I'm like, whoa, that's it. Yeah. It's done. Job's done.
That's so good. Now, Sarah, last time we spoke to you, Billy was about to start university. And I remember you talking about how it was quite a big emotional step at the time. How is it now, 18 months later?
Well, he started university at Goldsmiths, and then, but the band had just taken off.
We were on tour
So he was trying to start university, and we were also on a UK tour that at the exact same time.
Yeah,
so,
which was complicated.
He lasted at uni for...
One term. Yeah.
Because we would go, I mean, every weekend we were on, and he just couldn't do both of it, and he was spending so much of his, he was racking up so much debt doing something that he couldn't, jump all the way into, so he decided to...
So weird that he chose a rock star lifestyle over university.
I don't know, figure.
Who would have known? No, I think it was really hard, because he got to... Because his youngest two brothers were... Well, you were at school as well, actually, at the time. So the three of them were at school in Somerset, and he was trying to be at university in London. So for practising, he'd come down to Somerset twice a week to practice, and then on tour at the weekend. So he was missing every Friday and Saturday at university, and every Tuesday and Thursday. So he did a bit of remote. He got to hardly any lectures, and he was catching up online, but he didn't. You know, he met people, but he couldn't go out and socialise because he was on tour. And then he got to the end of the term, and I think there were some people he met at university, actually, who just said, why are you never here? And he went, well, because I'm on tour with my band. And they were like, oh, God, you're that band. Oh, and they listened. They went, God, that's amazing. They went, why are you at university? And he said, well, because I was going to go to university. And they said, but when we leave university in 3 years' time, we're hoping we might get the opportunity to maybe be in a band like yours. So why are you at university... as well as doing what we're hoping to do in 3 years' time. And yeah, and then he thought, God, I'm going to be 60 grand in debt, and which is what you end up with from university, don't you? And meanwhile, you know, the priority was either going to be the band or university, but university you could always do another time, and the band opportunity was there then. And actually, yeah. I think it was the right choice, because since then, it's kind of flown since then more and more, and they did another UK tour in the autumn, and they've got...
And we're so fortunate as well that obviously we... I mean, Mum's known by some people, so it kind of gave us a leg up so that we could start from not scratch. We kind of had this thing so that we could just really focus on the music and really, really go for it, instead of trying to work out what we do and how we do it and all of those things. It was really nice.
I think, well, they entered a competition to play at Glastonbury and won that. And so that kind of took them a bit to another level. And I suppose, you know, in life, you get opportunities. This is what I'd say to anyone. In life, everybody has opportunities, and some people get some one way and some people get some another way. But you kind of have to take the opportunity when it's there. And the opportunity was there then, and it probably wouldn't be in 2 years' time. So... take it while it's there, basically.
So if you've got all four at home at the moment?
Yeah, they're all at home.
So your big emotional step lasted about a term, and then you had them all back under one roof.
Less, because I was on tour with them, because I quite like bit less than a term. So I would go on tour, and they print all these T-shirts, because Charlie did screen printing at school, so... He came back with this screen and was like, oh, Billy, let's screen print these. So they printed all these T-shirts. So basically I get to go and hang around with them and stand behind a table selling their T-shirts, which is brilliant. So
amazing.
I love it. So I'm having a really nice time. It's very easy selling somebody else's T-shirts. You just stand there going, there we are, there's the T-shirt. I mean, like, it's a really simple job that I like. No responsibilities. It's not my problem. I don't really know anything about it. I'm like, what button do I press on this? Some kind of app thing. They say, here's the phone. I go, press, press, press. Love it. That's
amazing.
That's my kind of job.
So before we let you go, we have to ask about Celebrity Bake Off and what it's like being in the tent.
Well, it's amazing. Actually, it wasn't what I was expecting. It's really fun. I mean, I'm a terrible cook, but I do sort of think that if you focused and concentrated enough, anyone can cook anything, because if you've got a recipe and you follow it, as long as you can read and understand how weighing scales work and you're patient enough, then you can cook. My problem is that word, patience. I don't have much patience. So I'm not going to say it was all successful because the patients were even in the tent, which was really nice because I didn't have to do anything else. It's not like you can, it's not like you think, oh, I better go and send an email, which is why most of my cooking goes wrong, because I think, oh, I'll just put that in and then I'll just go and send these emails and I think, oh, it's burnt. But, you know, there was none of that. So it's sort of focused. But even there, there were so many other things going on in the room, in the tent, rather, not the room, felt like a room. But I kind of, like, got distracted. And then you think, oh, it must be long enough. And then it wasn't long enough. I didn't cook things long enough anyway. But it was good. And I did better than I expected, to be honest.
Mm. It's funny you mentioned you're not a good cook because your boys sort of take the mickey out of your cooking. On the podcast, don't they? There was an episode where they were talking about the soup that you make with mouldy onions and all sorts.
So the truth is, if she really wants to cook, it's always going to be really nice. You want to be a good cook. Problem is, then again, you don't have very much patience, and normally things rack up in the fridge, and then Mum won't really want to cook, so she'll do like a, oh, well, that looks all right, whiz it all up in a blender, and then,
yeah.
I mean, if it looks bolognese, then put it on some spaghetti, if it resembles that a little bit, or if it's more soup-like, obviously that's a soup.
Whiz it more or whiz it less, that's the options. And I really hate waste as well, bolognese is normally, if there's any kind of bits of old, like, cooked broccoli or vegetables.
You're making it sound even worse than it actually is.
Whiz them through the blender, whack them in the bolognese, stick more chili in. All fine, you know. There's very little waste in our house.
Oh, yeah, and then bolognese is just chili the next day because all you need to do is add in those.
Yeah, put some beans in.
Beans.
Yeah. Serve it with rice. Boom. Two meals.
There's nothing that can't be fixed with chili.
Well, I agree with you on that, actually. That is so true.
And possibly hot honey. Chuck some hot honey on it and the world's a better place. It's fine.
Totally. There's honey and chili pretty much fixes almost anything. A bit of blob of cream, that also fixes things, doesn't it?
Or cheese. Cheese fixes most things.
Fixes most things.
Cheese is good.
If in doubt, a splash of sherry.
Oh, well, Charlie and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been fabulous to chat to you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for having
us. I hope you're not cooking dinner, Sarah. Bye.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Netmums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.